Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Every day, guys are going to play, and they're going to have their good and bad days. They're going to go out there. Then the guys that sometimes are more situational or platoon sometimes might read the fact that they had a good day or a bad day, that they don't play the next days because they had a bad day. No, because this is a better matchup for this fella. And
what I'm going
to try to do this year differently, I normally worked a game in advance with everybody. So, like, we play tonight. By the time you get home tonight, you'll know if you're playing tomorrow or not. We'll text the lineups out for the next day. I wanted to make sure everybody at least knew by the time they went to bed what's happening the next day. This year, I'm going to make a solid attempt to put series out at a time. So, and then again, I don't even know if that's going to work well or not, because a guy might be upset for 2 days knowing he's not going to play for the third. You know, so it's, you don't know how this is all going to play out, but it's there. This is how we're going to play it. If you don't like it, come see me. This is why I'm doing it. This is the reason, etc.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is Joe Madden. And, of course, for the lineup, Beast is out there. He's talking about how you line him up and basically when you let a guy know what he's going to do and you're moving things around. And this goes back to the revolution that we've seen a long time ago, which is, of course, about the leadoff hitter. And, you know, you don't have a Mookie Betts or a Frankie Lindor to lead off a George Springer. You know, we think
Dexter
of leadoff hitters.
Fowler.
We think of leadoff hitters as kind of these scrappy, traditionally, kind of fast, scrappy.
For all the lineup Easters out there right now.
Kind of little on base guys. And that's not the reality of what's happening in Major League Baseball. And certainly when you look at a guy like George Springer, you know, he's the first guy to hit a home run to open a season and 17 and then follow it, doing it in 18. Never happened in baseball history before that a guy opened the season with home runs, and he's hit a lot of them to lead off games. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, who's going to lead off for the White Sox? Is John Jay your leadoff guy?
I don't know. Because here we go again with Joe
he's
Madden.
He's here now,
though.
And you don't want Moncada doing that?
You know, the annual debate over the leadoff hitter. I do think he's right about the lineup situation, though, because – in terms of having at least he's right about expressing concern over sending out the lineup for a series on Friday. If you're not in the lineup all weekend, what you're having guys who probably are going to check out or have a reaction to that. I don't know what's wrong with letting people know the night before the way the Cubs have done business since Madden has arrived, and then they come to the park, they know what to expect. I don't know if that was a big issue with Joe. I think, you know, the inconsistency with the leadoff position is something that, you know, we've talked about a lot. We'll continue to talk about some more because it's unresolved since Dexter Fowler left town. Albert Elmora looks to be a guy that, to me and to you, makes a lot of sense. And yet, you talked about the prototypical leadoff hitter. Doesn't that guy also steal some bases? Doesn't that guy
But that's dead. That's dead.
Yeah. Speed. Speed on the base paths, no?
You know, I think the very fact that Kyle Schwarber was used in that position, and again, that wasn't a terrible idea. That was part of the revolution at that position. And there's no way Joe does that without getting Theo and Jed signing off on it. And I think that's where we need to get back to in this conversation. Because, again, Here goes Joe again. And our Joe mentioned, how do we know this is Joe? Again, explain to me, David, how, if you are under this sort of this ruling from above that you have to take these games seriously to open the season, sense of urgency was the turn of phrase. How are we going back to the same thing? It's because there's a belief that this is the way to do it, that this is what works. And so I can't blame Joe that Albert Elmora Jr. is not locked in as the leadoff guy. I can't, because if Theo and Jed wanted that, given Joe's contract situation and everything else, I think, number one, they'd have told him that, and number two, he'd have followed it.
I guess the urgency is staying flexible. Maybe that's, you know, or adapting to who the hot hand is. Maybe just like Rick Renteria talked about not having one closer. Joe Maddon's going to stay committed to not having one leadoff hitter. And that's okay, I suppose, because you have a lot of different options. I think everybody would feel a little more comfortable about the Cubs, you know, broken offense being fixed if you had somebody who was more reliable at the top of the order. I don't think that guy's Anthony Rizzo. I don't think that guy's going to be Chris Bryant, who got a spin there. I don't know if Ben Zobrist is a guy that you can count on for 139 games again. He's certainly, you know, probably he's your most consistent hitter coming back. He doesn't offer the speed, but if you look at, you know, the one that probably makes the most sense or gives you the most feeling of comfort or security, Ben Zobrist comes to mind. I think we both would like to see Albert Almora Jr. get an opportunity and become the player that, you know, you think he can be. He was that guy in the first half, but he tailed off too. So I think in fairness, you have to look at the way that he sort of played himself out, hit himself out of that role in the second half, and he wasn't in a position where you could come to depend on him the way you could in the first half either.
I guess 2016 is when this thing really started kicking off, where 10.6% of all home runs were hit by leadoff men in 2016, and that is the most since the end of the dead ball era. So you got to go back to like the 1920s to find guys hitting home runs and guys scoring runs and getting RBI in the same fashion since 2016. It's because we have baseball has kind of abandoned that traditional way of looking at it. And it's not just about setting the table and letting your big boppers come up and get their hits. It's about being able to jump on a pitch if you see one early in an at-bat, even if you're leading off.
I really thought that Ian Happ was going to be a guy when you went into last season that kind of won the job, if you want to call it that, in spring training, and you felt like, okay, this is a guy that offers you speed, it offers you some pop, and he's a guy that led off the season. Didn't he hit homer in his first at-bat down in Miami? And so he opened the season looking like the guy, and then he goes and strikes out 167 times in 387 at bats. That's not what you want at the top of the order. That's not what you want in any place in the order. But I think that he needs to reduce his strikeouts. I don't think Ian Happ is the answer. But you're right. You know, the way that you look at, everybody knows that the prototypical leadoff hitter is a thing of the past. Remember when it used to be the guy who could steal the most bases? You know who led the Cubs in stolen bases last year? Javi Baez. 21 stolen bases. You're not going to lead him off. I mean, it's not what you want at the top of the order anymore. So, and the Cubs aren't a team that run a lot anyway. So I think so you're left with this whole idea of by committee, the hot hand matchups and everything that sort of plays into the type of manager that Joe Maddon has been since he came here. And he does do this with Theo and Jed's blessing. I think we tend to forget that. And I'm guilty of that as well, because you hear Joe talk and you think it's him. But right. he's not doing or saying anything without their blessing.
And more so now than ever, don't you think? I mean, I would imagine that there is a great deal of conversation among these guys. If I'm Joe, I'm making sure that everybody's on board with everything I'm doing. Now, maybe
everything you're saying?
Maybe he goes the other way. Everything I'm doing.
Yeah.
I think there's a huge difference between what you say, and a lot of it is two drink minimum stuff and Joe up there cracking wise and telling stories. And
did you read the Mona Lisa?
Yeah, but I just think that the majority of the things that Joe does is kind of by the numbers. It's not, he's not a feel manager. He is a guy that pretty much follows sabermetrics and follows what the numbers tell him to do. And I think that because he is such a free thinker and because he is such a loosey-goosey way of operating behind the microphone, that we think of him differently than he really is.
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it, but I think sometimes when he is like that at the microphone, he gets himself in situations like yesterday where he's talking about, you know, the lineup choices on a daily basis, and he begins a conversation talking about how, you know, the communication that everyone, that has been such a big topic of conversation. How do you communicate with millennials? How do you let people know where they stand on a regular basis? And hey, we text them before they go home at night. We let them know. But this year we might do things a little differently. We might get so far ahead and over communicate, and we're gonna let them know. And then he makes a joke about how letting people know how often they're playing in a series and over the weekend, you might lose them for the first couple of days if they're not playing until Sunday. Ever sort of chuckles, but there's some truth in that. And there's some, if you're Albert Almora and you find out that on Thursday night, you're not playing until Sunday morning, what do you got Friday and Saturday if you get it? You know what I mean?
Well, let
is
me
that
ask
a happy
you
clubhouse? And is that a happy dugout?
This is a serious question. Albert Almora, would he be better off having a standard spot in the lineup, knowing exactly where he's going to hit, knowing when he shows up, where he's going to be in the lineup? When you talk about player development, does moving guys around in the lineup, does giving guys a regular spot help or hinder their development?
That's a traditional way of looking at it, but I like it, and I would think that players would appreciate the consistency in the approach. So if Albert Almora knows that if there's, you know, maybe it's lefty, righty, I think that he would benefit from being in the same place in the order, the same place in the lineup, and the regularity of that. Again, that assumes he's going to perform to a point where you trust him to be in that lineup every day. But sure, it's human nature to respond to regularity, to a routine. Athletes are creatures of habit.
312-644-6767. Have we been trained not to be lineupistas? Is there any doubt in your mind about the leadoff spot? Would you prefer to know who's there, regardless of whether or not the guy is a traditional? You know, Ricky Henderson's not walking through that door. So who do you want leading off? 312-644-6767. It's Mullion Hall on the Score.
Sam Panionovich.
Baby, you are so money.
Host at the Vegas Stats and Information Network.
They're going to give Daddy the Rain Man suite. You dig that? We're going to Vegas, Mike.
Vegas!
Chicago guy living the dream in Vegas.
You think we get there by midnight?
Money, we're going to be up 500 by midnight.
Yeah, Vegas!
Vegas, baby! Vegas!
Merck.
Your money, you know what else? You're a big winner.
Sam Panionovich.
This is the guy behind the guy behind the guy.
With Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
I've got my car and my ride and my wheels.
When I go to Vegas.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a joy to talk to our man in Vegas, Sam Panionovich. Good morning, Sam. How are
morning,
you?
Morning, Sam.
Oh, man, guys, I learned a new word this morning, lineupista. I love it. Lineupista.
Yeah, that's Joe.
For all the lineupistas out there right now.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one. It's anybody that is concerned with anything he's doing.
You'll see the pretty shirt. Great. The shirt's coming out soon.
All right, so let's start with Zion Williamson. I mean, here is a kid, and there's 1,000 debates to have over it. There's 1,000 topics of conversation. Are athletes getting paid? Should they be paid at the college level? What about the shoe deal? Why does the team get one? We learn more about insurance policies. There's just 1,000 different elements, but it looks like the kid wants to come back. It looks like he's day to day. How is Duke viewed? And certainly they had a real problem without him against North Carolina. Maybe it was the shock of that. Maybe Coach K could work some wonder, but what happened to their odds when Zion Williamson went out?
Yeah, and I'll leave the hot takes for somebody else. I'll just stick to the numbers. So there hasn't really been much of a change here in Vegas because, remember, I mean, Duke, they opened the season up. They were already 4-1 to win a national title. That was before game number one. They blast Kentucky. They go down to pretty much 2-1 right away. So you can't really raise them up much higher than that because there's already a huge handle on Duke. Like, they're already exposed, Vegas, on Duke if they win it all. So Caesars and the Westgate, they moved them up from, like, plus 200 to plus 225, and the South Point didn't move Duke at all. They're still plus 175. The only thing that you can really look at here is the other teams around Duke have sort of raised up a little bit, or risen up, I should say. Gonzaga's now, like, 6-1. You've got Virginia 7-1, Kentucky 7-1. So other teams have gotten a little bit higher as far as the odds to win, but Duke hasn't really moved all that much. It's just the surrounding teams have gotten better as far as the odds go. I will tell you, though, the South Point has been offering a prop for about a month now, the four against the field. Duke, Gonzaga, Michigan, and Kansas against the field to win the national championship. And the four were about minus a quarter, minus 125. The field was plus 105. I can tell you that prop has been taken down. So the South Point has gone ahead and taken that bet off the board. You can't bet it until they have further clarification on whether Zion will come back or not. But a lot of people here in Vegas, a lot of wise guys think that he will be back by the time they get to the tournament. But they haven't really moved the numbers all that much because you can't really move Duke off 2-1. There's so much exposure already.
Okay, Sam, we haven't talked to you since the big news of the week, and as much as I dread to bring it up again, Manny Machado is a Padre. What did that do to the Padres' chances? What did that do to the odds with the White Sox?
Padres up, down, back up. They went from 76.5 to 80.5, so they got as high as 80.5 wins. And when it got there, of course, you had some resistance. So the Padres currently 78.5, and now the White Sox under money is starting to roll in. Caesars got as high. We talked about this last Friday, David. Win total last Friday, a week ago, was 77 on the White Sox. Caesars has it now at 74. Because they had to drop it to 75.5 once Machado signed with San Diego. They bumped it down, and then the sharp money made it, you know, more enticing for other people to go, oh, wow, okay, well, maybe the White Sox aren't going to be this good. So now it's 74. So it's dropped 3 wins already in just a week on the White Sox win total. So Padres up, White Sox down, but you already knew that, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and we don't care. To hell with all of them. I find that interesting. So if the Sox were as high as 77 wins, and if Manny meant a 4-win jump, does that mean that Vegas would have thought the Sox had a shot at 500 if they had signed him?
Yeah, they would have been about 79.5. We talked about this a little bit last week. But remember, yeah, you have to think about where the White Sox opened, too. Their number opened 74.5, and I think it was sort of bet up. I think it was baked into that move up that if they did get Machado, that they would already be moving up as it was. So I think from 74.5 on the open to about 79.5, that's a 5-win jump, and that's pretty much what a lot of odds makers think Machado's worth, 5 wins. I mean, look at San Diego. They went from, you know, 76 up to almost 81. So, yeah, that's pretty much market share for Machado.
Who's going to be the home run king, the 2019 home run king?
Oh, man, Daniel Palka, question mark? No, probably not.
What a Sox guy.
That's nice. I'm laughing at this list because, you know, you got your heavy hitters. You know, this is whoever bats the most balls over the wall. Stanton's your favorite in New York, 6-1. Judge is 7-1. You got Chris Davis, Joey Gallo about 10-1. J.D. Martinez is 12. And then you get to the Chicago guys. I wish I could trust Chris Bryant to have more home run power. He's 80-1 right now. Then you got Sorbino. He's 100-1. $100 wins you $10,000 on a guy like Kyle Schwarber.
Wow.
Same odds for Rizzo, same odds for Abreu, and same odds for Javi Baez. And then you get into the big shot. Eloy Jimenez and Daniel Palka are 200-1. So 100 wins you $20,000. And then how about Yo-Yo? Moncada and Ian Happ are 300-1. Hey, look, if you got $100 laying around and you could throw it on, you know, Schwarber or Eloy to make 10 or 20K, why not? It's worth a flyer, in my opinion. Why not?
Sam, it's always bear season in Chicago. A lot of people speculating about the chances of getting Antonio Brown. I think a lot of NFL cities are having that discussion this week after the news out of Pittsburgh. What are the chances of not necessarily – well, the Bears, I think, is a real long shot, but what about other teams in the league?
Yeah, and the odds are reflective of that. So you asked about the Bears. We'll go there first. Have Antonio Brown week number one. You can bet these in the offshore markets. Bears are 15-1. So that tells you pretty much everything you need to know. That's reflective of the price there. But the favorite right now, San Francisco 49ers are plus 250. Then you got the Colts at 3-1, the Bills at 4-1. Cardinals and Steelers are 5, Jets are 7, Texans are 8, Packers are 12, and you'd hate to see that in Chicago, of course. And then you have the Bears and the Browns both right now. $100 would make you $1,500. So the Bears are right about what you'd expect them to be. I think they have enough on offense. I just think that, you know, you need better play out of the quarterback. And I don't know that the Bears are going to have any draft picks to trade for Antonio Brown. I mean, they just did all that heavy lifting for, you know, for Khalil Mack. But, yeah, San Francisco, the favorite. The Bears are about 15-1 to land Antonio
Brown. I thought Packers would be higher. I thought the Packers might be.
Yeah, they've got Butkus's nephew coaching that offensive line.
They have the draft picks, though. You want to dangle them, it could be tempting.
Back to baseball. Who's going to hit the most home runs in Chicago? The Cubs, one year we thought they'd have 5 guys with 30 homers. Wasn't that not that long ago?
2015. That was something happened then. No, 16 was the year that thing happened on the north side. Look, if I had to put money on it, I'd pick a guy like Anthony Rizzo. I think he's a guy who could probably hit, you know, if he's healthy and he stays, you know, stays on the field for 145, 150 games, I think, you know, Rizzo, one year he's going to hit 40 or more. And I think, you know, that left-handed bat, if he can have some protection both in front and behind, I think Anthony Rizzo could lead the Chicago market in homers. And And look, I'm dead serious. I mean, you throw $10 on Rizzo to lead the league. When you're out in Vegas next time, you throw $10, it wins you $1,000. He's 100-1. I mean, it's, you know, that's something you want to, you know, throw. You want to risk a little to win a lot. Anthony Rizzo, I'll go Rizzo at 100-1 to lead the league in homers. But your question was to lead Chicago. I'd go Rizzo of all the guys in the pack.
I'd go Eloy.
I'd go
with Eloy. I think
nice
he's coming
little,
up in April. He's going to miss 2 weeks. He's not going to miss 2 months.
Boy, you've got a lot of faith in the guy. We haven't even seen him yet.
I don't know.
All right.
No if you're
pressure.
Asking me today.
No pressure.
Yeah.
What about the win totals for pitchers? Who's going to win the most games in Chicago?
Yeah, in Chicago, you got – it's funny. The Westgate has five guys. Four of them are Cubs. Go figure. So Lester's got the most as far as win total. He's 12.5. Quintana and Hendricks are 12. Cole Hamels is 10.5, and this is not a good number if you're a fan of the White Sox. Carlos Rodon's win total – and a lot of this is, you know, reflective of he can't stay on the field for a full season. Rodon's win total is only 8.5. That's it's a pretty low number for an ace in your rotation.
It's your ace.
It's all right. Chris Sale will get it done next year after free agency. Help. All right, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Buddy.
Great stuff.
God bless you.
All right, guys. See you later.
That's Sam Pettyanovich.
See, as bad as the Sox could be, I would still think Eloy's going to hit a lot of home runs, and I would take the over on Rodon.
You know what I just heard? Once again, no respect for Javi Baez.
Ooh.
When you brought him up.
Rodon's never won double-digit games in his career, so there might be something to that number that, you know, we're scoffing at it initially.
You're on a bad team.
Right? You're a bad team, and he's had health issues, so that's understandable.
Guys have grown up a bit and understand when you don't play, it's not because somebody doesn't like you. Part of it is, like I said, developmental, and part of it's matchup. Some of it's trying to put you in a situation to make you look better. So it takes time for young players to understand it. I think veterans get that a little bit better, even though a veteran might want to play more often. He understands his role may be this, and it might be the best thing for him. It just takes time.
Sports Radio 670. That is the voice of Joe Maddon. He, of course, the manager of your Chicago Cubs. And always fun to hear Joe talk about the lineup and players in spring training. It's always a good time to kind of get a feel for it. And I think, David, what I find fascinating is we talk about the leadoff thing because Joe talks about it, so we start picking it apart. And we mentioned that George Springer has set a record in Major League Baseball by hitting a leadoff home run each of the last 2 years, and how good a hitter George Springer is, and you use him as a leadoff guy in Houston, and he's whatever he is, 6'3". He's a big dude. He's not kind of the normal size.
He's not your small and speedy hitter.
No. But they have an unbelievable lineup. So you can have a guy like that as your leadoff guy because – in his, you know, he doesn't waste at bats, and in his second at bat, he's going to be driving guys in. So it is not strictly a situation where he's setting up other hitters. He's also going to be able to drive people in. And the Cubs' problem a year ago, when we talk about Theo coming in to the postgame interview and talking about the state of the state, saying that the offense is broken. They had two guys hitting, right? Rizzo didn't hit earlier in the year, but by the end of the year, he was hitting. And Baez hit consistently.
Javi Baez carried them, yeah.
And that's it. And that's what you have to think about when you start talking about leadoff guys. If you're not getting on base, if you're not rolling over that lineup, it's really hard to score runs. And you saw in the World Series that the Boston Red Sox, it wasn't big boppers. It was just rolling through the lineup, everybody taking part in it. Just keep it moving, keep the line moving. And that's the kind of thing that you're more interested in with this Cubs offense than in just the big boppers. And we talked to Sam about who's going to hit home runs and who isn't. And could they have five guys hit 30 home? They need to have guys getting on base and rolling over the lineup.
Yeah. I mean, they have to have a consistency out of that position. But I think that we talk so much about the leadoff role, but it is only comes up once a game. I think you that gets overstated a little bit. Ian Happ began last season with a home run, and he thought he was the guy. He offered speed, he offered power, but he strikes out too much. And you have guys who have there's no perfect hitter on the Cubs lineup, but I think you're going to get a lot of different guys at a lot of different roles, and that's what Joe Maddon was alluding to yesterday. Versatility is the greatest strength of the Cubs, but some people believe it could be the curse because you don't get any regularity out of your lineup. I thought it was interesting that Ian Happ went to approach Maddon in the offseason. They talked about that, about playing more second base. And, you know, you look at some of those different lineup variations, and Daniel Descalso is the only kind of new addition to this lineup. And what does he offer, and who does he replace, and how does he factor in? You have the same guys, and you're expecting sort of the different results. And that's understandable given who they are, but there's not going to be any one guy. I'd be very surprised if there's any one guy that leads off, you know, more than half the games for the Cubs. I'd like it to be Almora. I thought it could be Happ, but I don't think either one of those guys is going to be the answer.
So, again, does it matter if you're not hitting down at the bottom of the lineup? Do we spend too much time contemplating the leadoff spot instead of worrying about the stuff that they talked about at the end of the year, mainly a broken offense? And does changing hitting coaches change the problems on offense?
Situational hitting, you know, and that's the funny thing that when you see Gordon had an item in the Sun-Times today about Anthony Iaposi. It stood out because they talked to him about situational hitting, and they talked to him about that idea, and he says he doesn't teach situational hitting. He prefers the term opportunity hitting. Well, call it whatever you want. You have to be better in the clutch than the Cubs were, and they have to be better down the stretch than the Cubs were. Does changing hitting coaches change the outcome? Well, you got to think, for a guy like Chris Bryant, it does. He's going back to hitting the way that he was when he was 8 years old, as he pointed out. You've got to think that just so many guys having down years, the bounce back issue, this lineup is going to be revived. You got to have a sense of that. And I think that's probably what you can expect out of this Cubs offense. That is very similar than the one that ended the season, and very similar to the one that Theo Epstein spent 71 minutes in his postseason address kind of criticizing. They're reinvesting hope in the core, and that's all they have.
And when you talk about a guy like Bryant, if he's healthy and he's hitting, that changes their lineup completely, right? That gives you not just another kind of big bopper, but gives you like a really live bat, a guy that can hit for average, hit for power, a guy that can do so many different things. That changes the way, you know, you look at this team. And again, I don't know that all of, you know, we talk about all these projections of where they're going to do and the baseball prospectus stuff at Bakota and all that. The bottom line to me is that if you need to be at least a game better than you were a year ago. And
Chris Bryant played 102 games last year. He hit 13 home runs and 52 runs batted in. You can look at all of those analytics and all the other advanced metrics if you want, but those numbers tell you everything that Chris Bryant wasn't last year. If Chris Bryant has the kind of year that Chris Bryant should have, you double those numbers. He's got at least 25 home runs. He's going to drive in more than 100 runs. He's going to be the guy that you want him to be in the middle of that order. And a lot of these questions that we're asking are going to be moot points, because when you have somebody like that complimenting Javi Baez, complimenting Anthony Rizzo, frankly, it doesn't matter as much who's leading off. It really doesn't.
Yep.
Because when you have the guys in the middle of the order performing up to the standards that they set for themselves, and Chris Bryant has a Chris Bryant type season, who leads off? Okay. Then that's when you can make fun of the people questioning the lineup and the lineupistas out there among us.
For all the lineupistas out there right now,
312-644-6767. Let's try Jimmy's on the road. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Good morning, guys. You know, I think this team is like they've gone from young and promising to now they're one of the more veteran teams. You know, there isn't room for a rookie in this lineup. There hasn't been really for at least three seasons. And while they're all still, except for Rizzo and Hayward, they're all still in the 25 to 26 range. These guys are veterans now. I think Theo's press conference at the end of last year, you know, I remember I called him. We were talking about how he was calling out Maddon. I think he was as much calling out the players, saying we have to have more of a sense of urgency. I mean, there's some responsibility on the manager to get the team prepared, but he's, you know, the front office is looking at guys like Kyle Schwarber, Albert Almora, Addison Russell, Javier Baez. they're not looking at them like 22, 23-year-old promising guys anymore. They're looking at these guys like veterans.
Right. Saying, well, but the problem, Jim, and the problem with that is that you are who your numbers say you are, right? I mean, you look at Kyle Schwarber, and where you once saw him turning into one thing, he's turned into a different thing. So, you know, he needs to reverse the arc of his career and bring it back to where it was. You don't want the World Series year and the injury year and all the great heroics to turn into the highlight of his
How many
career.
Home runs off the top of your head do you think Kyle Schwarber hit last year? And I agree with you. He was bad 25? Down the stretch. He hit 26 home runs.
Yeah.
If you get 26 home runs out of Kyle Schwarber this year, is that a bad year? It depends what else he does and when they come.
No, and I'm not picking on him in particular, but I'm just saying that I think, you know, when you're calling a guy Babe Schwarber, then you're imagining that he's going to do a little bit better than that.
Right.
I'll be very curious to see the Addison Russell thing, because presumably part of his lifestyle change will improve him as a player. And I don't know.
It's the only reason he's still on the Cub roster.
Right.
Is the expectation that he will be better as a player and a person. Now, you wouldn't invest as much in him as a person if you didn't trust that he would become the player that he used to be, because he hasn't been that guy.
No, he has not.
And now the Cubs are telling you essentially by maintaining him and kind of trying to rehabilitate him, that they believe he can be, and that his personal reasons contributed to his professional disappointment the last two seasons.
And you know, we talk about Chris Bryant and his struggles with injury a year ago. Some of those, you know, you got to look at the position and what you got out of the position. You know, David Bodie came out of nowhere and did win a couple of games for you. You know, you wouldn't have had, you know, he hit some home runs in clutch situations. He had some big moments that helped you win a few games. So you got to kind of factor that in a little bit. I don't need to tell you about the Bodie story.
Well, I love the Bodie story. You know, nobody loves the Bodie story more than I love the Bodie story.
Right up your alley.
But I don't think that I'm going into this season expecting David Bodie to be the guy that has a lot of answers for you.
Totally agree with you.
You know, I love it, but I don't think that you can expect lightning to strike twice.
No, you're either going to, you know, you're going to need Baez, Rizzo, Bryant.
That's your business plan if you're the Cubs.
You don't make all the guys you stayed with.
You're not going to make a living counting on David Bodie to carry you.
No.
That's a bad business plan.
Let's try Mike is on the north side.
Hey, morning, Mike. Morning, Mike.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think all this sabermetrics has ruined baseball. I remember when I was a kid, if a guy hit 30 home runs, with the exception of Killebrew and Jackson, he didn't strike out more than 60 times. Now a guy hits 30 home runs, he strikes out 150. When I was a kid, they stressed two things. Hitters have to get more hits than strikeouts, and pitchers have to throw low strikes. If they go back to that, the game would be more exciting. I'm tired of waiting four innings for a home run.
Hmm. Okay.
Harmon Killebrew and Reggie Jackson, huh? Those are the two examples. That's interesting. I mean, there are a lot of other guys that were.
I don't think sabermetrics have ruined the game.
Strikeout or home run. I mean, sabermetrics has changed the game. I don't know about ruin the game.
Right.
But there have been historically.
You could argue that specialization has changed the game and ruined the game more, right? You can make that argument, and that's one of the things that they've looked at with rule changes is the idea that there's so many pitching changes and there's
sabermetrics
so many.
Has changed the way that managers handle their bullpen, certainly.
Right.
Now, and the swing and miss factor has changed the way
they're ruining the game.
You sit through games and how long games are. But I think there's always been an element on every team and every lineup of the boomer bust phenomenon. The Dave Kingman, right? Dave Kingman hit the year he hit the 37 home runs, he struck out 156 times.
The problem is when you're making 15 pitching changes and you're making the game 3.5 hours long. You're already dealing with a society that has a very short attention span, and people don't want to devote 3 hours to a sport, let alone three plus.
We're a society that would rather read 140 characters in a book, you know, essentially.
That's fair enough. That's exactly right.
And that's reflected in baseball. You know, nobody wants to sit through a 3.5 hour game.
I have never read a magazine, but Twitter's pretty quick.
They give you 280 characters now, David.
Oh,
give us a little bit of credit, all right?
280.
That's right.
Yeah, wow, that was a stretch.
I can read a good paragraph now.
I could write one.
You sure can. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.